And with any company, you will have people that dislike your company. This is true. What you want to do is minimize the amount of people that dislike your company. And sometimes it's just that what your vision is for a company and what you and the owners have decided isn't that user's vision.
Welcome to the Measure Success Podcast, where we feature top leaders on how they measure success in their business and life. Now, let's learn from their experiences.
Carl J. Cox here. I'm the host of the Measure Success Podcast, where we talk with top leaders about effective strategies that inspire success. This episode is brought to you by 40 Strategy. 40 Strategy is built to make business work for small to medium-sized businesses and organizations by designing world-class strategic plans, but more importantly, help keeping them accountable to actually get it done. Go to 40strategy.com to learn more. We're also excited about our book that has been released, Lost at CEO. And for a special period of time, and that is right now, we're actually giving a few free copies. If you send me a direct email at carljcox@40strategy.com, say you reference this episode that we have here, and we'll ship you out a signed copy of the book. Or you can go, of course, to amazon.com as well. I'd like to do a special shout out before we introduce our guest to Nick Hutchinson. That's how I met our guest today, Laura Castleman. Nick and I, he introduced us to the Book Thinkers event in Columbus, Ohio, which was extraordinary, a super fun event. And from there, I also met Laura, who was speaking at it. I was like, Laura, I'd love to have you on the show. And she was so kind to say she would. She's the CEO of JVZoo.com and co-founder of Vita Street. Laura climbed the corporate ladder by mastering the rules. I love this, of the old boys club. More often than not, she beat them at their own game. And she's been published in Inc. magazine, Entrepreneur, and her book, Trust Your Increments, is a Wall Street Journal bestseller. Laura's companies have been featured on the Inc.'s 5,000 list of America's fastest growing companies, an incredible four times. Laura, welcome to the Measure Success Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me join you today.
Absolutely. Laura, so for those who don't know who JVZoo is and what your business does, give the audience a little bit more understanding behind that.
Certainly. JVZoo is an affiliate marketplace. So we have a network of over 1 million affiliates that can go and market your product and sell your product for a percentage of the price. We handle all of the back end for you. All you need to do is list your product, the details of your product, and how much you're willing to pay affiliates to go and market that product and sell it for you.
Outstanding. So how, I'm curious, how did you get into this? Okay, let's get into this business of doing affiliate marketing.
Well, I have a very strange path to being CEO of a tech company. My background is actually theater. I was a Radio City Rockette dancing in New York, but I also was climbing the corporate ladder at the same time, so that when I stepped out of my dance career, I stepped into my first executive position. For me, I was all about operations, strategy, learning how businesses run, what makes the people of the company want to work and accomplish things for the company and keep them happy. And that's kind of what led me down the path of being an executive. And then I met the owners of JVZoo, got involved with them, started as a consultant. Now I'm their CEO.
Wow. Wow. That's an awesome experience. And so it's interesting, the opportunity to grow an affiliate, there's a huge opportunity to scale out of that, right? Because of the need of people trying to sell their products and move forward with that process. So help me out a little bit of how fast, I mean, you're from the Inc. 5,000, you're growing pretty fast. What are you doing to make sure you can continue to scale?
Oh, as far as continue to scale, it's continue to deliver what we say we will deliver. And just being there, providing great customer support, being approachable and reachable when the users of our software need assistance. We don't say, hey, it'll be 48 hours and someone will get back to you. It's at max 4 hours before they have a resolution to their issue. We are available because we realize our business runs on people.
So how long, and that's not easy to get a 4 hour turnaround and actually a resolution. You didn't say just getting back to them, right? But actually resolving what was actually on hand. So I'm kind of curious, do you like net promoter type scores? I mean, how do you know? I mean, that you must get a very high set of grading. How do you know it's working and what's enabling them to go, okay, we're going to keep on using you in the future?
So we know what we're doing is working because for 12 years now, we have grown organically by a minimum of 800 new users a day. So word of mouth is just out there all the time. And with any company, you will have people that dislike your company. This is true. What you want to do is minimize the amount of people that dislike your company. And sometimes it's just that what your vision is for a company and what you and the owners have decided isn't that user's vision. For us, we know that we serve our network. We protect our network as a whole. So while five people may not like something, if the other million love it, we're on the right track.
Well, what type of products are people putting on to your online system?
So JVZoo primarily has software that is sold, digital downloadable products that are instantly accessible. We have the ability for physical products. And of course, we know that when you sell a digital product, if you include something physical that gets mailed out, the chances of refunds decrease greatly. So we have that ability. We push that ability to our users, but it can be anything from an ebook, a how-to, education, anything like that, or filters for Instagram. It's wild what can be out there today that's digital, downloadable, accessible.
So now I'm going to ask an additional question. So you have massive amount of users, people getting to it. So that appears to be like an Amazon, a busy marketplace. So how are they seeing you, right? How is an individual organization being differentiated so they can still be seen in the marketplace?
So there are a couple of things that people can do when they are new to our network. They can place ads strategically within our platform, but we limit the number of ads. We don't want people getting banner blindness. We don't want people to feel like, hey, I'm just trying to use this platform, but I'm getting attacked by ads all day, because we all know what that is like. So we really limit it. People need to be strategic about looking at our launch calendar when products are launching, trying not to launch their product if it's similar to another product on the same day or in the same maybe week, because you want your affiliates to get on board and to promote it more than one time. You want them to have it on their social or their email list, wherever, and to continually share with their list of buyers why they are promoting this product and why they feel it serves their list of buyers.
Oh, that's very helpful, and to understand that deeper. So let's go to your book a bit. So I love the title. And that's, once again, you talked a bit about that and your business and your growth when you're speaking. Trust Your Increments. I love the title of that. First of all, not an easy thing to write a book. So tell us first about that process of creating and writing a book. How long was that? Was it easy? Was it hard? Tell us about that, your experience.
Well, I wrote the book pre being a parent, so I think everything was massively easier at that point in time in my life. I had no clue of the amount of extra time I had. And not only that, but the time that I had where I wasn't exhausted. And for some reason for me, all the way up until my 40s, because I had my baby when I was 41, I really didn't need sleep. I needed no sleep to go. I could go on 4 hours a day. And that was with me waking up, checking on emails and everything during my sleep. So I wrote the book while I was running and growing JVZoo. I believe I started 2018, finished it 2019, because I was running multiple companies, flying all over the world, speaking, doing events, things like that. And then I just sat on it, had my baby, and thought, I need to get this book out there. I need to make sure that I'm putting something that's going to be positive in the world and hopefully influence people to be aware of the way women are treated differently in corporate America, and to hopefully do something, even if it's minor, to make that stop in its tracks.
So what has been the response from people who have been reading the book? How do they respond and go, wow, this is something that has really changed me or helped see things differently?
One is that women have reached out to me to say, thank you for saying what we're all so afraid to say anymore. It used to be, even just 5 years ago, that we could speak out and say, hey, we're trying for equal pay here. And it was very popular to talk about these things. Now we're not supposed to talk about them anymore, especially since the pandemic. We're not supposed to talk about the fact that women aren't treated equally, that we don't get paid equally anymore. It was like the pandemic happened and we're no longer having that conversation. So a lot of women have reached out to say, thank you, because you're right. If we speak about it, now we're difficult women. But we don't want to be difficult. We just want to be paid for the same job title for equal output. That's it. It's not wild.
No, absolutely not. And so what are some recommendations that you do provide to women who are in that situation of where they've either learned or found out, or they're checking out in other places that their pay is 20% less than perhaps the median of somebody who has equal experience, equal output, right, to somebody else is doing? How do you help coach them to go, this is how you do it, right? This is how you can do it with confidence and still get to what the outcome is, right, which is being paid fairly in that situation?
Absolutely. Well, confidence comes with preparation. So when you have the numbers and you know what the average amount of pay is, you're equipped to say, according to my research, and you list the places where you found your information, I'm being paid 20% less than the average. Then what you want to do is know, what is your history? What's your experience? And be able to provide the experience that you're bringing, any accomplishments or achievements that you've had both at the company that you're currently with and previous ones, because these things do matter. And then you need to be prepared to ask. A lot of women don't ask for the raise. They don't ask for what they need, or they don't apply for the next position because they don't meet every single listed requirement in the job posting. But the reality is that neither do the men that are applying for the same job and getting the pay. You just have to prepare, educate, or educate and prepare. Speak up and go in willing to say, I know what I bring to the table. Don't have to be angry. Just have to be confident.
Love that. And I love that you made, you know, with preparation comes confidence, right? And I would say that's so true. You know, it's, you know, whether it's preparing for a test, right? Or an interview, or in your case, you know, you have a salary change, right? That can be a very stressful event for somebody when they're relying upon that job, right? To help pay for their mortgage, rent, expenses, mm-hmm. et cetera. And then all of a sudden, you're going and confronting, right? And saying, hey, I think I'm not being paid fairly. Now, it is interesting. You're talking a little bit about there was this period of time in 2020, 21, right? Where I would make an argument that the employee kind of owned things a bit, right? You know, because there was such a challenge of getting people to work, right, in the first place. And, and now you have the pendulum swinging back 2023 and 2024, where there's a lot of changes going on. You have AI that's being able to automate and take away roles and responsibilities that people have. You have outsourcing going out even to, if you quote unquote, white collar jobs, right? Which is a bit new. Marketing jobs have really changed and transformed over the past 12 to 15 months. So in those situations, right, where I would say there's a little bit more fear that's come back to the employee, what are you now recommending consulting to men or women, right? Yeah. In this case of, you know, how do you have confidence now, right? When perhaps in that remote case, you moved to somewhere across because you thought it was okay. And now the employer's like, you need to come back. Otherwise you lose your job. What are you doing to help consult and individuals say, hey, this is what you should be doing. And this is why you can still provide value.
Absolutely. So one is, again, research and prepare. So you mentioned AI, and a lot of people are scared of AI because companies are utilizing this and replacing people in little bits right now, increments, so to speak, but it will become more and more prevalent. So you need to educate yourself on how to use it as a tool. AI can be utilized as a tool and make you better at your job as well, but you can't say, I'll learn it the day before or the week before. It's constantly being updated and it learns from you and you using it. So you need to get in there and utilize it and let it learn from you and constantly teach it. Don't be threatened by it. Know it's a tool. The next thing I think is for the remote work. If you have left because that was part of the deal, you were allowed to leave, allowed to work remotely, then all you have to do is show your value. Yes, companies may want to see you in person, but they don't need to see you in person every day. And I have been doing for 12 years now, 100% telecommuting with my team. They had the ability always to come and go as they pleased because I hired mature adults who knew how to balance their personal lives with the deadlines and their responsibilities at work. And I would argue that my team's always been more efficient because of the respect that I gave them and no water cooling. They're not huddling around in the office chit-chatting. And we all know what that's like, wasting time. Because if they know, this is my expectation, this is my deadline, I have all these things in my personal life. So if I get this done in less amount of time for work, I can get to what I need to do in my personal life. They'll do it every day. I don't care for my team to tell me if they have a haircut, a doctor's appointment, or a child's soccer game. You are a responsible adult. Go do your thing. So if you want to argue this to your employer, you need to argue how you don't ever miss a deadline. You will always be there for important company meetings, whether that's calling in or if you need to fly in once a month or quarterly, that you are a team player, but they hired a mature and responsible individual who will deliver every time.
Love it. I'm curious, you know, and it's so interesting, once again, as the companies who are already working remotely, right? And so really COVID wasn't a change and you were already ready, right? There was no transformation. You just moved forward and kept moving. So I loved how you say, hey, look, there are expectations. You've always had that. I'm curious, do you ever meet with a team annually, quarterly, in person, or have you not worried about that?
Yes. So we met frequently prior to COVID. We would do required yearly. Everybody gets together. We all strategize. We all have fun together. We do team building together, go to dinners, chit chat, water cooler together for, you know, a week at most, maybe 3 days. Let's all go home. But when we would have crazy deadlines, maybe I had my dev team on a crazy deadline, I would offer them to fly in. I'll put you up, come into the office every day, work as a team. And that would really motivate them to heads down, let's do it, but we're in this together. It really built a team environment and my team loved it. If there was ever someone that's like, hey, I've got a, you know, newborn at home, I can't do this, but I will be online with you guys, that was fine too. Because, you know, we would keep them included all throughout the day. But there is something to be said about meeting in person, but it equally loses its value when you're doing it every single day and you create such a routine that it becomes mundane.
I love that concept. So I now want to move over towards strategy because we are both love strategy. And that's one of the things I love about your book. Once again, as you talk about the concept of planning, right? Planning and getting it done. What are the key elements? And I know you talk about a book, but for those who haven't read it, what are some of the key principles that you do in your own strategic planning with your company every single time? Like if I don't do these principles, it won't go well.
Well, I think the biggest thing is you have to know where you're going. What's your destination? What do you want to accomplish? So many people in business don't thoroughly define this. You're never going to accomplish it, especially not consistently. You might once or twice by chance, but usually you'll run out of money by throwing things and seeing what sticks. You've got to know where you're going before you can have a thorough plan. So once you define what you want to accomplish for the year, where you're going as a company, then you remove everything else that doesn't get you there. And it's so important to say no to things that don't support the final vision. Would this make this person happy? Would this make 20% of our users happy? Does it get us where we're going? No. Unfortunately, we have to say no to that. We'll put it on our list. We'll come back to it next year and see if that fits into our plans next year. So I think that's super important. And then just breaking it down. I am very big on there's no such thing as over planning. The only way that anyone could over plan is if you let yourself get wrapped up in the planning, you never start executing. So I think, you know, you make the plan, you break down the plan, quarters, milestones, days, and then you check off your list every single day. And I always plan for the next day before I finish today.
I love that. You talked about a few key things there. One is you having this long-term strategic plan, since like you do a lot of annualized planning of like, hey, this is where we're going to go. This is our destination. This is where we're going to try to complete. Then you move forward with, okay, we are going to actually start working. And then you went down to the micro of like every single day, I know what I'm doing. So I'm curious, do you do longer increments in between for your teams, like whether it's weekly or monthly or quarterly? How do you help make sure that that execution, that's the hardest part, right? Let me clarify this statement. Coming up with a plan is one thing, getting it does another. Right? And as we both know, there's a lot of great plans that never get done. So, but clearly you have this execution mindset of that we are going to get things done. Mm-hmm. So what things do you do with your teams to help make sure that they are staying on track to move forward? And if you could go into that kind of, once again, daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, what do you do?
So the first thing that I do is share with everybody who works for us in any position, it doesn't matter what the goal for the year is and why we've chosen that. I think a lot of companies choose to hide things from employees. And they say, you know, you're on a need to know basis, whether or not they say those words, that is what they are saying to their teams. All you need to do is hit these numbers. All you need to do is focus on accomplishing XYZ. You don't need to worry about what this team over here is doing. In my opinion, that is ridiculous. I want everyone on my team to know where we're going, what day we're leaving, what day we're arriving there. You can get there early if you want to, but you can never get there late. This is the goal. This is the deadline. You arrive on time and you communicate. I will communicate with you. You communicate with me. Once I break down the quarters and the milestones, I have managers that I let run their departments. Again, I hire mature, responsible individuals. That goes for my managers as well. You manage your teams accordingly. But I never allow any team to have crazy meetings. So my dev team, they need to talk daily. They have a stand-up every single day. They go over where they are, what's standing in their way, what they need from other people. And that's it. Because if there are roadblocks in the way, we need to remove them. If someone else on the team needs to get them something so they can finish it, they need to know. So every day they do that. And every day, if they didn't finish what they were supposed to, they're going to let their manager know so that tomorrow it gets addressed first thing. Other than that, we have different departments that may need to do something similar, meet Mondays or Fridays. But if they don't need to talk Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they don't talk. We've got Slack. We can send an instant message. We don't need a call. One day a month, the first Wednesday of each month, my teams get on a call. Whole team. Everybody gets on a call. Remember, this is where we're going. This is our milestone. Are we on track? And then maybe we're like, hey, you guys want to play poker next Friday? At this time, the whole team can join in on a poker game. You know, but we really do try not to overburden people with useless meetings. If it can be a Slack message, if it can be a quick communication between two people or five people and not the whole company, then that is what we prefer as opposed to everybody getting on and chit-chatting about nothing.
I think it's so important where you talked about those different periods of one is that the daily huddle concept, you know, within the micro teams, right, that are there and that things are being communicated. It's amazing of the importance of the day-to-day routine and making sure you're continuing to move forward, right? Because often it is an obstacle, right? There's somebody not approving something. Perhaps there's money that you approve. You need a supplier or a vendor, right, to help out with a certain particular action. And you might need you, Lori, right, to step in to say, hey, we need to move forward now, right? And they aren't moving because they're not reacting to some situation. And us as managers and leaders, if we can help clear those obstacles so they can move forward. But if we're not aware of it, like we wait a week, that's five business days, right? That a key thing could get done and it doesn't. And I could tell why you're moving so fast, right? Is because you're getting that feedback on a continuous basis. I mean, those who are listening, if you don't do daily huddles with your team, it's a great opportunity, right? Or at least weekly, you know, it's like, if you're not comfortable daily, weekly is like at minimum, you know, that we recommend of people meeting with each other. And I love it that you do that on a consistent basis to make sure that people are working well.
And I will switch it up too. So if I have people that are doing a daily stand-up or huddle, what we'll say is, okay, let's do calls for this long. And then we're going to set it up in Slack where it's automated and it sends it to them at this time each day. And it's like, hey, these are the three things or the five things we need to know right now. I don't need complete sentences. I'm going to get where you're going. If I have a question, I'll write you back. So we'll have those just automated and fire off, but we don't leave those going too long either because people will just start copying and pasting the answers over. So depending on their position. So we just make sure we constantly switch it up. Don't make it where it's just boring routine, but we get the information that we need and we let them go do the thing that they need to do. And one other thing too, is that I have employees all over from West Coast to Serbia, you know, so we don't ever let time zones hold us back. In fact, we think the ball is always being passed off to the next team. So what we may consider our morning huddle may be 10 p.m. for one of my other set of employees. They are passing the ball off to the morning team on the, you know, the East Coast of the USA. And then they go to bed. The team keeps the ball rolling until they pass it back. So I don't think we need to let time zones stand in our way. We just communicate and keep the ball rolling.
And I like that. Once again, the challenge and the opportunity, right, of working globally is that things could get done while you're sleeping, right? You know, if you are moving forward, and so you can truly maximize that 24-hour period of time, and then finding ways, once again, to not feel like you're personally working 24 hours a day, right? It's that fine balance, right, of between it, but the organization itself could be moving through, and that's how you get so much faster speed, right, when that takes place. Right. I love it. I love that when you wake up in the morning and something's done that you didn't expect to get done for a week or two, and then all of a sudden it shows up, right? Because you have, once again, global teams that are helping to get through that. Okay, so we're going to move over to, I could tell you and Ike, we could talk strategy for like way too long. And so I'm curious about, first of all, the business. How do you measure success in your business?
So while we are a company for profit, what's really cool about JVZoo is we don't make money unless our users make money. There's no charge to use our platform up front. Everything is this great synergy of when it works for you, it works for us. So saying we're a for-profit company really works out well because first comes the customer service, the delivering on the product, having a product that does what it says it's going to do every single time. And if for some reason there is something that's not working, having someone that's there to fix it quickly for them. So it's a really cool synergy that we have set up here at JVZoo.
That's awesome. And I love it, once again, how you're measuring success based on your customer success first, right? And then through that. And then from that, you know, as you're measuring your growth, and obviously you're having significant growth, as you mentioned beforehand, I'm kind of curious, when you get different growth stages, what's good enough? What's strong enough? You know, how do you know that you're doing what you're still trying to accomplish?
Yeah, so one is that, of course, we want people to use our platform to build their businesses and to be able to branch off, like that their business grows, that this is not their primary portion of their business anymore, that it is really a secondary or tertiary portion of their business. But we need to still give them a reason to keep this going, this avenue of revenue going for them. But we need to attract new people consistently. So seeing those constant new user signups, seeing, you know, a good percentage of those new users actually make money on the platform, because, you know, signups are one thing on a free platform, but it's being able to see people utilize the platform to generate income. That's where we know we've got this thing still working. We're not falling behind on times. And then, of course, we can always look at what's happening in the economy, how sales are going, and are we keeping up with the growth or the sales rate of what we're seeing?
Thank you. I appreciate you sharing that. So let's flip over to the personal side. I'm always curious, Laura, you mentioned beforehand of how you, prior to having a baby, you know, you had endless energy. You worked 20 hours a day, basically, or, you know, you found ways of always being active and always doing something. Here you are now. It's different, right? You know, you have this different, important person in your life, right? Your daughter that you care about and you want to make sure that things are going well for her. And then your body yourself is different, right, too, right? You know, you have a whole different set of responsibility, right? And when you're a parent. So today, what type of habits are you doing on a consistent basis to still make sure you can be your best?
Well, I come from that dance background. So I have, you know, this athlete in me that believes that taking care of my body is a huge priority, because I think that this is like the only permanent home I will have in my life is my body. So I really always prioritize my health and my fitness. I know that if I'm in a bad mood, the best thing that I can do is release those endorphins, whether that's going on a walk outside, jumping on the treadmill, lifting weights, any way that I can release those endorphins to make me feel better, that's what I'm going to go to first. I know that other people have things that they want to do, but we all know by the science that exercise is the easiest way that we can make ourselves feel better. Really stress. So I exercise. I wish I could say 7 days a week still. It's more about five. I'm on a 5 day a week. Sometimes I'm just having cuddles with my 3-year-old on the couch on the weekends, you know, like in the morning. And my schedule's changed completely. I used to be the person that I was up way before the sun came up. And as soon as the sun started rising, that's when I would run on the beach. I wanted to run with the sun rising on the beach. Now I can't leave my 3-year-old in the house alone. I can't do that anymore. So it's more after I drop her off at school in the morning that I come back and I work out, but I do prioritize it. I get it done. And I pay attention to the food that I fuel my body with. I'm not one of those people that's like, no sugar ever, no doing this. I am more of like a 85, you know, I want to say 80-20, but I'm more like 85% of the time I'm doing great. And the rest of the time, I'm going to cheat a little. I'm going to have like some sugar with my daughter. We're going to celebrate the holidays and have a little donut or something, but it's all balance and it's choosing the healthier options more times than not.
I love that, how you have, you know, I think that's always that challenge. You have to go all in, right? You know, in certain areas, and you're saying, well, I am in, but I'm going to quote unquote have, I'm not sure balance the right thing to say, but you know, you're willing to, as you said, kind of use the term cheat where you could still enjoy, right? Some of those things that I think we all do, right? We all have a little bit of sugar, but we know we shouldn't be having it all the time, right? And so that's always that challenge of it. And so I love it how you've balanced that due to the right areas. And I love that 5 days a week used to be seven. You've managed that a bit more. So then from that process, is it, I'm just kind of curious from a time perspective, do you invest a half hour, an hour, hour and a half into exercising, and then you start getting into work? Kind of what do you do?
I am no longer like a consistent machine. It really depends on the day. There are some mornings that I get off the treadmill, say I've been on the treadmill 45 minutes, and I come straight to my desk sweaty because I need to get on with my team. I need to get things going with them. And then I look up, it's 11 a.m. and I still haven't showered because I didn't have something like this podcast with video that we're doing today. There are other days that when I get back from school drop off, I know you have 30 minutes to work out and then you have to get in the shower and you've got 25 minutes. You know, like I know these things. I'm like, okay, no lollygagging, get it done. And that's why I prepare for the day today to yesterday. I prepare in advance. I know what I'm looking at. I know my schedule. I couldn't fit it in today because I can, as long as I know my schedule and I plan it accordingly. And then of course, playing with your toddler, that is exercise in itself. Sometimes dangerous exercise when they start jumping all over you, but it's still exercise.
When you are planning your next day, I'm curious, what type of, do you put it on? Do you just piece of paper? Do you put it on your phone? Do you put it, you know, how are you making sure you're keeping track every single day that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing?
So I am a tech CEO who believes in pen to paper. And that's because I do educate myself. You know, I always come armed, ready to go. And I know that the research proves that the simple act of pen to paper is associated with more robust brain activity. So yes, if I am out and about and I don't have my pen and paper with me, I'll jot something down in the notes app of my phone. But then when I get back and I'm planning my next day, I just use a spiral bound, cheapo notebook, nothing special about it. You don't need to spend a lot of money to plan appropriately. And I just have my to-do list for tomorrow. And I try to put it in order, but there are times that something comes up later. So I'll just star it to say, hey, this needs to be reprioritized in the morning. And you know that, grab it first. And then I eat the frog. I do the uncomfortable, not fun things first so that I can get to the easy things later. And I make sure that things that need the most attention or the decision-making power get done first while I'm fresh.
That's great advice. So how do you measure success in your personal life?
Ooh, in my personal life, I would say success is measured by the relationships that I've built, the people that I have chosen to have in my life and how they view me in our relationship as well.
Love that answer. It's so interesting, right? Of here, you know, the majority of our talk, right, is about business and getting things done and growing and getting a high achiever. But at its core, what people remember is your relationships, right? And how you impacted other people. Right. And I love it how that is a key way of how you're measuring your personal life. So thank you for sharing that. What's a book? Not your own. Trust Your Intents, of course, I would recommend that to people who are listening. But what is a book that really inspired you that you like to share with our audience?
I love Ready, Fire, Aim, From Zero to 100 Million. I have read that multiple times. Sometimes I read it for inspiration. Sometimes I'm like, I know I'm going to find something I already know, but I just seem to have lost along the way again in this book. And it just motivates me to go, I know how to do this. I know how to take a business from nothing to something. And so let me refresh my memory. So that's a go-to for me.
Laura, this has been an awesome podcast. I think you're great inspiration. I love how you're growing businesses. You are managing your personal life, business life, and getting things done. How can people connect and learn more about you?
Sure. You can go to lauracastleman.com or social media, The Laura Castleman, and I am responsive. So if you message me, you have questions, I will get back to you.
That's awesome. Laura, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the Measure Success podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And to everyone else who's listening, we are so grateful for it. We encourage you to go out and rate our show. That's, of course, how our show continues to grow as we are striving to become in the top 1% of U.S. business podcasts. And so we're moving in that direction. We're so excited about. And then secondly, as we always like to say, wishing you the very best and measuring your success. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Measure Success podcast. We'll see you again next time to learn from the best. Remember to subscribe now to get future episodes.